Good afternoon, folks, and welcome back once again to another edition of the Come Out of Her, My People show. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and yes, this is the show where, in general, we talk about all the aspects associated with what it means. That verse there in Revelation 18:4, come out of her, my people, so that you don't participate in her sins and therefore don't partake in her plagues. I've said for a long time, I think the plagues are obvious and upon us. And the question, of course, is, given the continued acceleration, it seems like every week I look out at the situation and go, wow, how much more obvious can it get? How much more immediate can the need be? And how much more blind can people also be to what's not only coming but already here? Well, this week I want to talk about something that kind of hit me earlier, well, several times of late, as I listened to and thought about various things that are going on, no longer hidden. And it occurred to me, we have kind of an easier time anymore recognizing in-your-face Satanism than we do communism. Both, of course, are not politically correct. You're not allowed to see them, much less acknowledge that they're there. But as I was thinking about all of this, and the term commie flitted through my mind. And remember how that's been demonized? If somebody says commie, they must be a redneck, probably a wife beater, probably all kinds of nasty things, but certainly not somebody that any self-respecting leftist or anybody that watches TV in the modern era wants to hang around. You just don't say the word commie anymore in polite company because you'll be branded as, you know, one of those. And as I was thinking about all of this, I couldn't help but remember the John Birch Society, which is still around and still basically pointing out that, they have been right since the olden days. What were once called conspiracy theories, and how dare you even think about those kind of things that the John Birch Society was mentioning, not only were but are still true. So back to the kind of central theme here that I want to start out with anyway, this idea that... Well, Satanism on parade is pretty much in our faces, and of course that means it's not just the Super Bowl halftime show anymore. There is a culture of death. I have talked about this quite a bit over the last several years at this point, especially in the Torah teachings, because ultimately the singular distinction that separates the God of the Bible and His Word from all of the other pagan religions is the emphasis on choose life. Right there in Deuteronomy 30. I've often suggested choose life is the best simple two-word summary of the whole Torah. And it's an open book test, right? I've laid before you this day life and blessing, death and cursing. Therefore, choose life that you and your children, your descendants, your seed can live. That was the reason the Messiah came. In John 10:10, he says, I've come that they might have life and have it more abundantly. Well, again, we have a culture of death. And it's increasingly obvious, even if it's still somewhat hidden, that this Satanism on parade is almost mainstream. In other words, it's not quite there yet. I think back to Hitlery, as you've no doubt heard me refer to her. This is a woman that some of her top aides were noting years ago. Well, she is a high-degree witch, they say. Certainly been involved in all kinds of things. Even tweeted about it, joked about it, kind of openly. I saw a piece this afternoon about the left-wing commie from Texas, Beto O'Rourke, who was evidently caught on a video wearing a devil goat costume, says the story. Now, I haven't verified all of this, but what I thought was funny was the claim, this came from Mike Adams at Natural News, that the media is now desperately trying to spin this emerging video as just another one of those things. Oh, you know, it's a comedy band that he was engaged in. It's not really a goat that he's dressed up as. It's a sheep. Yeah, it's a sheep. It's not a goat. As if most Americans would even know the difference. Well, the only difference between where we're at and where we'll soon be, I'll suggest, is that whether it's Hitlery or the pedophiles on parade, too, and all of those people that were caught with the Pizzagate scandal, and that's been widely, ignored by the way stream, pretty soon it won't even be an issue anymore. Oh, yeah, they're pedophiles. Hey, if you're not, there must be something wrong with you, you homophobe, Islamophobe, pedophobe, you. So we're getting there. And we'll notice kind of an increasing movement along those lines too, I suggest. Not just the culture of death, in other words, but the culture of literally everything else that hasn't already been legalized or mandated as being anti-scriptural. This is another comment that I have pointed out for years. Just read the Torah. Understand the things that the God of the Bible says are abominations, like a man lying with a man as with a woman. Well, it's not only going to be legalized and licensed by the Supreme Court, but mandated, subsidized, and if you don't like it, you'll be demonized and you'll probably lose your job and your livelihood. Those things that were once considered verboten because the Scripture said they are abominations and they carry the death penalty are now literally being elevated to, well, almost sacraments. And that brings me to this story that I want to kind of start off with to make that point. This came this week in the Satanic Republic of, well, the Satanic Communist state of New York, which on Tuesday approved and signed legislation expanding the sacrament of abortion. It was called the Reproductive Health Act, and it was passed by overwhelming margins in the commie-controlled Senate and House up there, and signed by one of the worst, most evil governors in the United States, perhaps in history, Andrew Cuomo, who had already said that he basically wanted to mark the anniversary of Roe versus Wade, and that this administration is going to be, quote, the most progressive agenda this state has ever seen. Now, here's what's funny, and for the most part, with the exception of some of the alternative press, this was ignored. And that is that the bill literally was passed to celebrate the anniversary of Roe v. Wade, January 22nd, 1973. And Cuomo said the following as he signed the bill. With the signing of this bill, we're sending a clear message that whatever happens in Washington, women in New York will always have the fundamental right to control their own body, unquote. Well, except, of course, where it matters. For example, in New York, the average woman cannot defend herself with a gun against rape. She certainly can't prevent a stop and frisk by an unconstitutional so-called public servant that might want to grope whatever she's got underneath that outfit there. And, of course, if they want to grope her at an airport or in order to get on public transport, that's perfectly okay, too. So it's always bothered me, folks, that these idiots will prattle about the woman's right to her own body. Only, though, when it comes to killing a child. Can she protect it with a gun? Hell no. Can she prevent somebody else from doing something that they might want to it, especially if they have a uniform? No. So don't give me her own body control. No, it's just another one of these whoppers. What really matters is they celebrated the anniversary of Roe versus Wade by passing this bill, which essentially proclaims a fundamental right to choose whether or not to have an abortion. And in the process, the bill, say conservative summaries of the law here, erase the state's recognition of preborn babies older than 24 weeks, or approximately 6 months, as potential homicide victims. In the process, it removed abortion, any reference thereto, from the penal code entirely. And then they came out and said there are all kinds of other so-called health practitioners that can perform abortions now. You don't have to be a full doctor anymore. And if it's a late-term abortion, you don't even have to have a second doctor on tap in order to make sure that if something goes wrong and the baby is born alive, well, we just kill it and throw it in a trash can, I guess, nowadays. In other words, it seems to be this, and I'm going to put it fairly bluntly here. If you're in New York and you got a coat hanger, hey, have at it. Senate Majority Leader said, we have a president who's made very clear that he wants to overturn Roe v. Wade, so today we're celebrating something different. Yes, in New York, women's decisions matter. Yeah, like I've already said, unless they choose to defend themselves with a gun or, don't want to be illegally searched and have their privates seized. The New York State Right to Life Committee said the law goes a lot further in practice than the proponents are admitting yet, because declaring abortion to be a fundamental right. So you don't have a fundamental right to free speech, not in New York. You don't have a fundamental right to freedom of assembly or of worship. You, for crying out loud, don't even have a right at all to keep and bear arms. They got permits whether you can have it in the house, out of the house, and so forth. And they also mandate that everyone now takes part in the culture of death. Furthermore, even pregnant women whose babies are killed by violent attacks, no longer have the penal code to fall back on when it comes to seeking justice. So this is an abomination. I'll say it again. What we have seen here is that New York has declared a sacrament. Remember when abortion was considered, well, at least in some states, to be, if not an outright evil, at best, a necessary evil. Even proponents, in other words, not too many years ago, admitted, well, abortion is a last resort. It's a necessary evil. What we're seeing today is, no, it's no longer a necessary evil, folks. It's a holy sacrament. It's a celebration to be mandated, subsidized, and if you don't like it, you're the one to be marginalized. All right, let's talk about the other element of the satanic duo here, the commie plot issue. And literally, I could do entire shows on this. I generally haven't, simply because the history is out there. I encourage people to go back and reread it and recognize, in the context of where we are, just how much of all of those things that the John Birch Society and the various Russian defectors and others have warned about for years have already come to pass. Saw a great piece from Dave Hodges at the Common Sense Show, who reminds us about several, well-known quotes, people like Nikita Khrushchev and Lenin and other, Stalin, you name it, various commies from times past in Russia, and their prophetic warnings have literally come to pass. Remember this one? This was Khrushchev. First, he said, we'll take Eastern... Oh, maybe this was Lenin. There are so many quotes, and they do overlap, and they tended to quote one another. We'll take Eastern Europe first, then the masses of Asia. Well, that's pretty well done. Then we'll encircle... And ironically, folks, it's now Western Europe, because the people that were under communist rule in Eastern Europe, like the former Czechoslovakia, now the Czech Republic, Hungary, and other satellites and influenced states have kind of come out of it and said, hey, we've been there. We don't want it. And it's Eastern Europe that is leading the way back while Western Europe is falling to the Muslim invasion and the communist takeover. Look at France. Look at Germany. And yes, it's kind of tough to tell the communists from the Nazis, but that was the whole point all along. Back to the quote. First, we'll take Eastern Europe, then the masses of Asia. Then we'll encircle the United States, which will then be the last bastion of capitalism. We will not have to attack. It'll fall like an overripe fruit into our hands. And that's where Khrushchev said almost the same thing in 1960. Remember the banging the shoe incident? Lenin, 1954. We cannot expect Americans to jump from capitalism to communism, but we can assist their elected leaders in giving Americans small doses of socialism, bigger and bigger doses now, until they suddenly awake to find, here we are, they have communism. Khrushchev, 1960, said, you Americans are so gullible. No, you won't accept communism outright. Well, that was then. Nowadays, we have Alexandria Occasional Cortex, who doesn't know communism from Marxism, from, a free market if she ever saw one, and lots of other literally blithering idiots in Congress. Oh, it was Lenin, too, that talked about the useful idiots, or was that Stalin? So many people talking about useful idiots, and now they run Congress. Okay. No, you won't accept communism outright, at least not then, he said, but we'll keep feeding you small doses of socialism till you finally wake up and you'll find you'll already have communism. We won't have to fight you. We will so weaken your economy until, here it comes again, you'll fall like overripe fruit into our hands. You see, they quote each other, and it's a similar concept that keeps getting repeated. Basically, what essentially is obvious, if you step back and look at it, is that this is a long-term Soviet strategy now implemented to perform a Sovietization of the United States. We have the USSA now. Number of folks are referenced in this piece. I remember interviewing a fellow named Colonel Stanislav Lunev back in the 90s several times, who was also another one of these Soviet defectors. Some wondered if they were literally double agents, and it's hard to know, but at least the warnings they gave have proven prophetic, whether they intended them to be a warning or just another way of pushing the America with a K right down that road. When Viktor Suvorov, a former Russian intelligence analyst, defected to First England, he revealed Russia's top-secret plans to attack the U.S. and undermine the United States from within via subversion of what now passes for political leadership. Suvorov had worked as a Russian intelligence analyst. He worked for the GRU with Russian special forces, Spetsnaz. I've got friends that are now saying, hey, Spetsnaz have been spotted in a number of places. They're here in America. And all of these folks warned about Russia's true intentions. after the Russian high command had succeeded in getting Pentagon officials, well, either to let down their guard or to come on board, it's hard to know, and engage in a high-level but mostly one-sided technology transfer. That's been going on now for decades, folks. I remember doing stories back in the Clinton regime about how Clinton literally treasonously transferred high tech and perfected, helped the Chinese deal with some problems with interstaging of their ICBMs and so forth. All of this stuff would have carried a death penalty had we still had any concern about communist infiltration and treason from within. And Hodges puts it, under the wrong president, most recently Obama, America has now been weakened to the point where it simply cannot adequately defend itself. Is this part of why we're seeing what looks like the Trump cave? That's a theme I'm going to come back to several times over the next few minutes. Another well-known defector, Anatoly Golitsyn, high-ranking KGB guy who fled to the United States and warned Americans about the secret Russian plan to attack from within. He's generally considered to be among the first and most revealing on the secret plans of Russia to attack America after faking Perestroika, the demise of the old Soviet Union. You've probably heard the name of his book, The Perestroika Deception, one of several, in which Golitsyn wrote about the deceitful intent behind their Leninist strategy, and present-day communists actively pretending, basically, that Russia is being democratized. Now, here's the irony. Whether Russia has been democratized or not, one thing at least seems clear. The United States has been Sovietized and communized to the point where Russia, at least, as much as I don't like Putin and recognize he's a former NKVD, KGB guy, rotten to the core, well, he doesn't seem to be any worse than our KGB guy, CIA guys, NSA guys, like Brennan and Clapper, and so many others that have literally sold out America from within. I'd rather have the enemy outside the gates, to remember what Cicero once said. Okay, so here we have American leadership completely, utterly, obviously compromised in a number of key positions going back years and kind of culminating with the Obama-style presidency. And Hodges points out, Golitsyn, Suvorov, only a couple of the dozens of Soviet defectors who told essentially the same story, multiple witnesses, dating all the way back to the 1960s. And again, Stanislav Lunev was another one. Have the Russians captured the White House? Well, they came close. No, it wasn't the Russia, Russia, Russia thing. This is old news. Hitler was supposed to be the winner. Clearly, she was already on board via Uranium One and the treason there. The entire high-level ranks of the FBI, you name it. This story points out that Obama's communist affiliations were well documented because of a number of books on the subject. I've seen, I don't know how many. Joel Gilbert, one of them. He wrote about how Obama was active with the Weather Underground, a group known as the May 19th Communist Organization in New York, Bill Ayers, Bernadine Dorn, a number of folks, former senior White House advisors David Axelrod, Valerie Jarrett, were evidently both Weather Underground, headed by those same folks, Ayers and Bernadine Dorn. These folks were all called the Red Diaper Babies. You may have heard the term. Sons and daughters of well-to-do parents who openly espoused, well, at least openly among themselves, now in hindsight, they're not hiding anymore either, their desire for communism, and they raised their children to be the kind of revolutionaries that eventually did exactly that, took over the Obama regime and destroyed America from within. Other notable Red Diaper Babies you've probably heard of include Rahm Emanuel, and of course Mr. Fast and Furious himself. I can commit treason, and ha-ha, even Congress. While they may sanction me, can't stop me from being a rich guy and going on and getting my rewards. A Valerie Jarrett situation also. She and her family and the Ayers family have been multi-generational friends. This is an old story. The entire Obama regime is pretty much a nest of communists. That ought to concern all of us. Larry Grathwall, former high-level FBI undercover operative who penetrated the Weather Underground, the late Larry Grathwall, has written about it. And there are tons of others, Frank Chapman, you name it. So essentially, this is old news, but it's news that ought to be increasingly, well, it ought to resonate with us as we recognize that the commie plot, far from being discredited, and, well, you can't even talk about it in polite company anymore, is a done deal at this point. And that kind of brings me to the other more pressing issues. Because a lot of folks, rightfully, I think, at least, were thankful that Donald Trump was elected instead of the witch herself, Hitlery, who would have no doubt probably already attempted to seize Americans' guns by now. At least that would have brought world Civil War, rather, 2.0 about sooner. But we could have certainly seen a whole different situation, no doubt about it. What's happened instead is that the Weather Underground and the communist insiders have literally said, the heck with your election. We're gonna go ahead and pretend like the right person won anyway. Eventually, if they get their way, they'll put her in. You've probably heard about all the plots. If Trump survives, and he so far has anyway, although there have been a number of attempts on his life, no doubt. Well, they got other plans. If they can't impeach him, I continue to wonder how long will he be able to survive what they have planned. But maybe, folks, maybe it's already over. And I'm going to point to a couple of areas that at least give me pause on that score. Yes, we have the usual crop of Goldman Sachs guys, Obama holdovers, essentially deep state crocodile insiders embedded within the Trump regime. He's had some hideously awful advisors, some do-nothing folks like Jeff Sessions, but maybe the new guy will make us long for Jeff Sessions. Now, I've done this story before. Arguably one of the most evil people in Washington. And I'm thinking, yeah, that even includes the likes of a James Comey and a Robert Mueller. Might be their daddy, William Barr. A Bush-era appointee, former attorney general, literally the insider's insider. He calls Mueller himself a good buddy, so you know the guy is pretty much a criminal. But wait a minute. Look at the rest of his record. He's an admitted open gun banner. And furthermore, this is the part that really bugs me. I did a story earlier in the week from James Bovard, investigative reporter that I have great respect for, who points out, look, this guy was knee-deep in literally standing up for and helping to get off, now he's been in the witness protection program for years, one of the most evil snipers ever to kill an American woman holding her baby, and then walk away from it. But not before he went to Waco and led the Delta Force team to kill a whole bunch of Americans who tried to escape the out the back of the burning inferno of the church there. William Barr helped that FBI, pro bono evidently, get away with murder in the slaying of Vicki Weaver at Ruby Ridge back in 1992. But there's more to this story. Horiuchi killed Randy Weaver's wife, Vicky, as she was standing in the door of their cabin. He'd previously shot Randy Weaver in the back, and the suspects were given no warning, no chance to surrender, and no action, of course, was taken against the FBI agents by them, and no action was taken against the FBI agents after the murder was successfully covered up. During the process, Federal Judge Edward Lodge slammed the Just Us Department and FBI because, hey, this doesn't sound all that different now, does it? They concealed evidence. They showed, quote, a callous disregard for the rights of the defendants and the interests of justice. And this particular, well, judge and even the Justice Department itself in a 542-page report detailing federal misconduct and criminality suggested that criminal charges be brought against the FBI officials at Ruby Ridge. That would include, by the way, Larry Potts, another good buddy of William Barr, who got away with murder on a figurative and literal level. Attorney General Janet Reno, Menachemo, later nominated Potts for deputy director of the FBI, and Barr, the nominee now for AG, told the New York Times that his good buddy Potts was, quote, deliberate and careful. Well, that's at least true, folks. He deliberately murdered a bunch of people and got away with it. That's my opinion, obviously, because he did get away with it. Anyway, he said, I've developed a great deal of confidence in his judgment. I can't think of enough good things to say about him, unquote. A few months later, the FBI, even criminals that they are, suspended Potts, and he got away with it and retired. And there's lots more. We'll be right back after the bottom of the hour break.
But don't leave a trace. Hate your next door neighbor, but don't forget to say grace.
No, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
welcome back, folks, to the second segment of the Come Out of Her, My People show. I'm your host, Mark Call. And as we went to break, I was talking about really, really nasty, evil, bad swamp critter, literally one of the worst, William Barr. And we don't have time in an hour show to even outline all the nastiness this guy's been involved in. Did Trump cave, though, is the point. Why, oh why, for crying out loud, would he ever nominate a guy this much of a Bush-era criminally connected insider? I guess you could say, hey, remember Jeff Sessions? Fool me once, shame on me. Fool me, well, how many times would Barr now be? Well, anyway, shame on you and shame on everybody who didn't realize that something really stinks here. Okay, which leads me to the week's story that I think is still just playing out. And, of course, it goes like this. Remember Nancy Pelosi, who is arguably one of the most evil speakers for the communists in the House that the United States has ever seen, a swamp critter if there ever was. She uninvited Trump from the State of the Union. He, at least for a while, seemed to stand up and essentially said, okay, well, if it's can't be security that's the problem, because obviously we could, in fact, secure the venue. You wouldn't go to a place that couldn't be secured now, would you, Nancy? She was willing to get on a U.S. taxpayer-paid military flight and go touring places like, well, the Middle East. I guess she felt like if her safety was at hand, even outside the borders of the United States, well, that's no problem. She's got big walls around her house and even big walls and military accompaniment elsewhere. So Trump said, no, no, go fly commercial. And she said, go pound salt, and the State of the Union is now off, because Trump has caved on that score, too. Now, I'll admit, when I saw this one, I thought, wow. Oh, yeah, he tells the good story. His advisors, no doubt, said, oh, it doesn't look good. Well, the question remains, will Trump survive long enough to give a State of the Union? Did he just pass up one of the best opportunities in history to go to the American people and say, look, we've got an invasion coming from the South? That's been obvious since we saw what's been happening in Venezuela, and the latest of a continuing wave of migrant caravans coming north. If there was ever a time for Trump to say, we have a serious problem, we need to address it now, well, folks, it's now. But what did he do? He caved. No, not going to give the State of the Union. Not going to tell the American people what's going on. Is he going to declassify all of those documents that would show just how evil the commies have been? Well, if he is, he better get on the stick, because it doesn't seem like it's going to happen yet. I saw some stories earlier, right? Will Trump declassify that damning evidence during the State of the Union? A great opportunity. Well, not anymore. I like this comment that, Mike Adams and a number of people have asked, have you ever wondered why Nancy Pelosi is so desperate to stop Trump from speaking to a live, televised national audience? Continue to wonder, because you're not going to find out. Now, when I saw this, I had to ask myself a question. Why, oh why, would Trump do something so horribly cave in evil? Well, why would he nominate a William Barr? Has he been compromised? Has he been coerced? Is he literally not even calling the shots anymore? Is it fear? Is it control? Now, I heard an interesting speculation, which led me to go even one step further. The speculation is, of course, the Fed, now that Trump has admitted and taken credit for the stock market bubble, which is inevitably going to collapse, well, the blame has been shifted. They can pull the plug any time and call him the Herbert Hoover of 2019, and it'll stick. So he's stepped in it. Are they now threatening him and saying, Mr. President, if you don't cancel the State of the Union, we'll pull the plug on your beautiful stock market and your beautiful economy, and you'll take the blame, and it'll all go down in flames. Maybe that's a scary thing. Well, I'll go one step further, folks. I've mentioned the vulnerability of the United States power grid as probably being the biggest existential threat the country faces, period, bar none. It's literally, and should be, scarier than the prospects for a nuclear war. We still have at least a kind of, sort of, mutually assured destruction. I'll give Putin this. I don't think he wants a nuclear war. I think even though they have their bunkers and they know that the people in Washington, probably not including Trump, but probably including Hitlery and Nancy and all the other good commies, will head right into their little bunkers at the first sign of mushroom clouds, and they'll have their little boys and their little girls and their nuclear reactors underground and everything they need to stay down there as long as they have to. Oh, yeah, trillions of dollars will do that kind of thing. But when all is said and done, if I was to pick, as I started to say, an existential threat, and the U.S. military and the Department of Defense have already warned that if there is a power grid down situation, 90% of Americans, folks, that's well over 200 million Americans will be dead, that's with a capital D, in less than a year. Not just roving rape gangs, but dysentery, other things will kill hundreds of millions of people very rapidly. The United States returns to the 1850s, and most Americans simply can't get by, given that they've been dumbed down with 1850s skill sets that they no longer have anymore. So a grid collapse probably is the really big issue. Well, let me ask it. Suppose Trump's advisors came to him and said, Mr. President, we have a credible threat that if you give that State of the Union message, the cyber attack that's planned and already in place, ready to go, will be implemented. It'll take down the power grid, and you won't even finish the speech before we pull the plug. Is it possible? Yeah. Is it credible? I would have to say absolutely. So, again, I don't know what's really going on, why Trump has caved, but I certainly look at what's going on and say, well, one thing that's not happening is the 5D or 4D or 7D chess that people keep talking about, because it looks like he's already been checkmated. And trust me, if he hasn't, we'd better hear about it real soon now. Otherwise, the game will be over, and it'll be a moot point as to whether he is or isn't still even playing. Now, that leads me to ask a couple of other questions. I want to throw out just one or two more stories that are appropriate. I've already mentioned Venezuela and the issue of the power grid failure and so forth. Let me throw out a scenario. And I've had several of my sources contact me on this. We're thinking along the same lines. In other words, let's say there are several witnesses that are pointing out things to watch for. We have the situation in Venezuela. If you didn't hear the story, basically the Maduro regime has ordered U.S. diplomats to leave the country. They're going to break off relations with the United States. The Trump administration has said, no, there's a new guy who's the interim president down there, elected as head of their assembly, and he is the guy we like better. At least 14 countries, last that I've seen, including most of Central America, except for the obvious criminal holdouts like Cuba and Bolivia, have said, yep, we like the new guy too, better than the old guy. Russia, on the other hand, has said the United States had better not dare to intervene. The Trump administration has umped up the ante. If anything happens to our ambassadors and so forth, we got a problem. A bunch of people have already been killed. Huge, hundreds of thousands of people in the streets in Caracas and elsewhere down there. Looks like a situation that we'll watch and see how it plays out over the next couple of days or so. Certainly doesn't bode well for people perhaps wanting to leave and head al norte. Which kind of leads me to this and some additional worries and concerns and things that I'll suggest as you ponder all of this and look at the commie plot we need to be thinking about now. A lot of them aren't going to be new. A lot of them are old issues, things like food and water and preparations that are still important, arguably more important than ever, and probably in greater need of getting done sooner rather than later if they haven't been done yet than ever. But let's ask about signposts along the way. Okay, what would come first, given all of the possibilities? Remember the old communist pinchers theory, too. I've mentioned this a number of times over the years. Pressure from above, pressure from below. Look and see what the commies in the United States have been doing. Pressure from above, pressure from below, pressure from the sides, social pressure, economic pressure, you name it, pressure. We got it all. So what about the next big events? What are the kind of things that people need to be aware of, thinking about, planning for? Well, obviously, one would be an invasion from the south, already underway. The migrant caravans, thousands at a time. The latest one is up in the thousands. Just in the last few days, the new commie regime in Mexico has announced, basically, hey, we're going to expedite the process for visas. Long as the people don't intend to stay in Mexico, evidently, come on in. Just head on north. Keep on going. Don't worry. Caravan already has food and transportation staged. We'll take you right up to the border. We'll take you to the weak spots. We know where they are. The Trump administration is not happy about this, but the commies in Mexico seem to have had this planned all along, and they've got high-level support from the globalists. You know the names. Continuing. So, a southern invasion, I would say, yeah, not only very likely, but already in process. War, same way. We've got war on a number of fronts. You've got the war possibilities in Syria. You've got United States continuing wars in all kinds of places that don't have anything to do with protecting the Constitution and or borders of the United States. Obama wasn't interested at all in doing that. Trump has at least tried and been thwarted because his executive pen doesn't seem to work the same way, at least not with federal judges, that Obama's did. So war is definitely a big possibility and increasing. One of the things that's been suggested, of course, is that if the United States doesn't bring home the troops from places like Syria, then when the attack comes on the southern border, oh, and let's not forget, the commies in Trudeau's Canada have pretty well taken over there as well. They've got the Islamic invasion. Maybe they've even got an Islamic PM. Who knows anymore? But you don't want to ignore the northern border either, nor the border coming across from Alaska and down. Pressure from above, pressure from below. Most Americans are totally oblivious to any of these possibilities. All right, well, the other two big ones I've already kind of at least alluded to. One of them, economic meltdown. That bubble is ready to burst. It has been kicked down the road, the can, over and over again. It should have burst in 2000, certainly should have burst in 2008, but a few $1 trillion created out of nothing and pumped into the people who really need it most, the too-big-to-fail banksters. Well, at least they did really well for the last 8 years. The economy, though, has limped along. There's been some optimism under Trump. Maybe the commies will be turned back. Not really. The debt bubble is still out there, and the piper will be paid. So the economic meltdown, I have contended, is absolutely inevitable. The only question is, when will the Fed simply stop kicking the can down the road and let the inevitable happen? They can't put it off forever anyway. I think they would prefer to wait until later in 2019 so as to best destroy any chances of Trump's re-election. But I think the threat's also out there. Mr. President, if you don't shut up and let us run things now, we'll just get it over with sooner rather than later. And the odds are you won't survive that anyway. Well, if the economic meltdown's not bad enough, as I've mentioned, the physical power grid down is arguably 100 times worse. Now, that brings me to another bit of interesting speculation. I kind of alluded to this. I've been setting it up here for the last several minutes. If you really want to have a force multiplier down in Mexico, and you already know that there are a whole lot of OTMs coming up and across the border, other than Mexicans, that doesn't include just people from Honduras and Guatemala and other locales in Central America, it certainly includes other than Americans, other than Mexicans, and certainly other than Americans, coming from other places in the world. Not just MS-13, those are the local homegrown Central American terror gangs. You've got ISIS, the Hitlery, Obama et al. Creation that's been covered up and armed for a number of years. Isn't it funny how they don't want to arm Americans or allow them to stay armed, especially not in New Jersey? But if you're an Islamic terrorist, oh yeah. Yeah, the army will leave perfectly good weapons and ammunition right there on the battlefield for you, along with brand new Toyota Tundra pickup trucks. Come and get them. When they get over to Central America and want to come north, I guess they have to bring their own weapons with them. So, yeah, here's what I'm heading to, folks. There are more than a few indications from insiders and others that suggest the real plan is lots of people already have come north across the border, lots of ISIS forces, Spetsnaz, you name it, embedded within the United States. Some of them have obviously been here for years with their communist sympathizers leading the way. In places, sleeper cells, as they're called, ready to be activated with the hidden keywords, and they could take down the power grid or do any number of other kind of nasty things. But wait, here was the new piece of information. Guess, as vulnerable as the United States is to a cyber attack in particular, and obviously an EMP, but that takes a little bit more high tech, imagine how much more vulnerable Mexico is. Their infrastructure has never been that much to write home about. Wouldn't take that many MS-13 and or ISIS and or other communist sympathizers embedded within Mexico. FBI probably has who knows how many down there already. State Department, you name it. CIA, yeah, sure. To take down the Mexican power grid. Cause huge mayhem and chaos down there. Same thing goes for their economic system, their credit system. But at least given that they're not quite as advanced, if you want to use that terminology, on the credit score implementation. Not as much electronic commerce, in other words, although it certainly is considerable by now and would represent a major destructive impact. Well, anyway, take the power grid down, take down a number of other systems in their infrastructure, and what's the first thing a whole lot of folks are going to go do? Oh, yeah, head north. So perhaps rather than tens of thousands of other than Mexican, including Mexican invaders, now you have literally millions of also Mexican invaders coming north and swarming the border. This is something the press doesn't want to talk about, but it is certainly into the category of a force multiplier. So let me review all of these things that I've laid out on the table as potential signposts, things to be concerned about. Now, I don't entice people into fear, as you know. Scripture says, fear not. What we're supposed to do is know the times and the seasons. Know, like the men of Issachar, what Israel ought to do. Know what we ought to do. Don't be caught like the thief in the night. Well, we've got plenty of warning. It's been obvious for a long time now. So there's no excuse for being afraid, and certainly no excuse for not being prepared at this point, although I know the inevitable aspect of human nature is, yeah, people are. And furthermore, no matter how much you've done in the way of physical preparation, economic preparation, you name it, all of us can always say, oh no, we've never done, haven't done, can't possibly do as much as we'd like to or need to. Well, there comes a point at which you've done all you can, and you need to rely on the Creator for the rest. I like that quote from John Adams. Duty is ours, results are God's. So do what we can, fear not, and simply be as ready as we can for what's coming, because it is coming, and we need to be prepared. And that includes spiritually, obviously. So prep now. All right, here are those potential major things, and this is not an all-inclusive list. This is just kind of the ones that I see as the major, obvious, and even imminent possibilities. An invasion, whether from the south or from the north or from the coasts. Remember, the port of Long Beach and most of the People's Republic of California, already run by the communist Chinese. And can you identify and separate them from the communist Southern Californians? Governor Moonbeam and his successor? Phew! I mean, how much worse can the Chi-Coms be anyway? So we got invasions from a number of sides. War, same way. Economic meltdown and grid meltdown. Well, wait a minute. I left out another one. I've been working up to this, but you can probably already guess where I'm headed. Assassination. Could be a political assassination. That's already well underway. Could even be a physical assassination if all else fails. In which case, I'll say it, what then happens is all of the above. So there are so many things we need to be aware of. And I have no doubt that behind the scenes, all of these things are at least on the president's mind, if indeed he hasn't already been co-opted. If indeed, in other words, he was what he appeared to be and is at least still trying to save America. I don't know the man's heart, but I certainly can see the actions, and the actions of late have really, truly concerned me. So when you see any or all of these things, in other words, it's perhaps too late. Certainly too late for the major long-term kinds of preparation people need to be doing. I'm thinking of things like skills. Okay, it's tough to gather skills that you don't have and to hone them in a matter of days or weeks. When it comes to things like getting up to snuff on your firearms training or reviewing some skills that you've already got, all of that's a possibility. But if you need to start from scratch, you're probably not going to have time. Same thing goes for if you need to start from scratch and say, oh, I better get out of the inner city in New York or Los Angeles or somewhere in Minnesota, for crying out loud. I need to go to some place where it's a little bit more likely that I would survive, given the inevitable. Well, it's too late to probably go out, buy a place, and make a full move in the time that we've got left. Now, if you've already been planning and got a place almost done, great. But what are the other things that we can do and should do? Well, I'll tell you one. I've mentioned this before. It kind of falls into the skill category, but it's certainly something I would encourage people to at least think about if you've ever considered moving in this direction. At least you could buy the equipment in the time that remains. I'm thinking about a ham radio license, amateur radio, the ability to communicate when the grid is down. And the cell phone system, of course, is one of the parts of the grid that 'll go down first. There are a lot of reasons why I mention that. One, of course, is that some of you know I'm actually teaching a ham radio class for our small local community up here now. Had a number of neighbors essentially come to me and say, hey, we'd like to be ready on that score. So we're talking about doing that and thinking about kinds of local preparedness stuff. That's all good. Of course, in the vicinity of where I'm at, most of the neighbors, not all of them, because there's a part here of the Mesa that is grid connected, but most of those that are kind of on board are off grid at this point. But that leads me to another comment that I want to make, because I know there are a number of people that are saying, well, I may be on grid in, suburban America, but not to worry. I have a solar grid connected system. I'll be fine. And watch carefully. Now, if you have enough technical expertise, and most Americans don't, I could, because I've got a background in electronics and EE and design, but I wouldn't want to try it on short notice. Understand this. If you have a grid-connected system, the odds are about 99% that if the grid goes down, you're down. One, most of those systems don't have batteries. So when the sun goes down, you're down. I got a generator. Well, that'll work for how long? How long will your fuel last? How long will it be until the neighbors hear your generator and say, hey, there's warmth and food there. Let's go take that guy out. All of these are considerations. The other related consideration, though, is if you have a grid-connected system, folks, for a bunch of reasons having to do with the National Electrical Code and a valid safety concern, if you don't know what you're doing and you power up your grid still connected to the main grid, well, one, you're going to find that you can't power it up anyway because it's got interlocks and safeties that won't allow it to. So presuming you know enough to take your system offline, shut off the main breakers, and bypass those things, you might be able to bring it up, providing you have batteries and the ability to store it and so forth. Well, you can see that's a lot to accomplish if the grid's already down, and perhaps you'd be better advised to just recognize what's going on, get the heck out of Dodge while the getting is good, because within a day or so, after the grid going down, it won't be in most major cities. You'll find the roads blocked, or worse, highwaymen and road gangs will eventually set up to waylay anybody that's trying to escape and take their stuff. Which leads me to another couple of repeated observations. Obviously, when it comes to things like food storage, water, and supplements, it's time to get what you need, and most importantly, get healthy and stay healthy. Also, think about security, especially if you have to stay in a suburban or metro area, because within about 3 days, you'll absolutely need it. So what I'm suggesting is one of the things that I would encourage people to do while there is this time left, recognize the coming signs, not just the big ones that I've already mentioned. But, for example, if the grid was to go down and the internet goes down and maybe you've got a battery-powered radio, well, can you tell whether the grid went down because of an EMP, some kind of a national attack, or a cyber attack? Could you tell the difference? Turns out it's really not that difficult. I can give you the capsule synopsis in about 30 seconds. A major EMP attack might take out a lot of things that aren't connected to the grid. Some cars would probably survive, especially the older ones. If they're really old and they have points and plugs, they'll be fine. But those that have more and more electronics, smaller and smaller, are most vulnerable. Part of the reason why I talk about the ham radio stuff, of course, is if you understand what a Faraday shield is, basically it just amounts to a nice galvanized trash can with a good sealing lid. You put anything you want to save, small portable electronics, don't bother with a cell phone unless you want to take pictures afterwards, inside the galvanized trash can, your ham radio equipment, your battery-powered radio, your LED flashlights, any number of small electronics, put them inside there, and they would survive an EMP unless it's literally right on top of you. Now, the same thing goes for a lot of solar systems that are completely off-grid, because power lines will tend to conduct a huge pulse into the house and take out anything that's grid-connected anyway. So where I'm headed is one of the signs that people need to be able to recognize in the aftermath of a supposed EMP attack is, well, was it really? We've joked about it up here on the Mesa for years. The possibility is that there could be a major attack, particularly a cyber attack, take the grid down, and a lot of us up here wouldn't even notice it. Things would work as before, till we tried to get on the web or make a phone call and found, nothing there. So for all of these reasons, folks, it's time to pay attention, be aware, and be ready. And may Yahuwah bless you and yours.